Hey folks, have you heard of cancer-fighting foods? The American Cancer Society discovered diets rich in fruits and vegetables may actually lower your risk of cancer. Think about that for a second. That's really important. Hopefully you hear this and run to the store for 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. But if you're like me, you probably don't have the time to do that, right? So maybe you should consider adding Field of Greens to your daily health regimen. Each fruit and veggie in Field of Greens was doctor selected for studied health benefits. There's a heart health group, lungs, kidneys, and metabolism groups, even healthy weight. What your body needs is in each scoop of delicious Field of Greens. I take it every day. Sometimes I put it in a shake. Sometimes I put it in my egg white omelet in the morning. Field of Greens can help prevent, treat, and cure cancer? No, but it can powerfully help you out at your next checkup. Your doctor will notice your improved health or you're going to get your money back. Here's the most amazing thing about it. I started using Field of Greens a year ago. My cholesterol is down, my blood sugar is down, my weight's down, my health is up, my sleeping patterns are better, my metabolism is up. If you want to experience what I've experienced, go check out Field of Greens. Jump into the ring here. You're going to get an enormous benefit. And it's so simple. Single scoop, a couple of seconds, healthy lifestyle all day long. Now, thanks to our good friends at Brickhouse Nutrition, Field of Greens is going to give you a 15% off discount plus free rush shipping. All you got to do is go to fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JUSTNEWS for your discount. That's promo code JUSTNEWS at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com, promo code JUSTNEWS. Go check it out.
Hi, folks. Welcome back to the John Solomon Reports podcast. I'm your guest host, Ben Whedon, and I'm the evening editor at Just the News, and I'm with you for 2 more days. After that, John will return to the program. Today, we're going to be talking to a former Trump advisor on national security who has some interesting ideas on what Iran may be angling for with its attack on Israel and how it may hope to achieve its foreign policy goals with a potential diplomatic or even military resolution. We're going to be going into the details of this conflict and how things may play out after the break.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
All right, folks, welcome back from the break. I'm here with Dr. Waleed Faries. He's a former advisor to President Trump on national security issues and the author of Iran, an imperialist republic and U.S. policy. Dr. Faries, great to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me today.
So over the weekend, there was a fairly unprecedented strike from Iran directly on Israel using hundreds of drones and missiles, relatively small portion of their stockpile, that ended up almost entirely getting shot down with minimal strategic advantage to Iran. But you've been putting forward a very interesting theory about what they were actually hoping to gain with this attack. Do you want to walk us through it?
Absolutely. Actually, we can simply observe that the Iran regime threw around 300 to 400 all kind of missiles and drones that they have as part of their larger army, which is about 3,000 to 4,000. So the first question is, why one wave, and why that wave basically targeted only really one place, which is the base where the Israelis have launched their own attacks to the compound inside Syria. The reality of it, that's the first conclusion I have, but there's a bigger one. The reality of it is that they wanted to engage the entire dome, protective dome. So when they engaged the protective dome, those final 10% where they were able to hit the base will tell them about the Israeli system. So it was basically a system measurement for the Iranian regime. But bigger than that, and that's what I posted about, from last night till today, is that the Iran regime is playing a much more complex game. They did a strike, a big strike on Israel, very limited, and then they hope that would trigger a response by the Israelis into Iran, which is a reality because the Israelis will have to respond at one point in time. Calculation in Tehran is that Israel will respond. When the response will come, then a second wave of Iranian missiles will hit. Worldwide, this shows that Iran and Israel are going into a much larger scale war. The media here, I don't want to name, but I would for a few, Washington Post, New York Times, CNN will start warning, and they did, that this could lead to a worldwide conflict. What is the result of that? The result of that is the Security Council, with many friends of the Iran regime on board, will call for a meeting, and eventually, if the Biden administration is on board, which we know they are on board at this point in time, will call for a solid ceasefire in the entire region. But guess what? That ceasefire is not going to be only between Israel and Iran. It's going to include Syria, Hezbollah in Lebanon, Iraq, and guess what? Gaza, Hamas. This is a strategy. I am claiming this is a strategy by Tehran to force Israel to accept a ceasefire in Gaza. And when that is done, basically Hamas wins the game because it is protected.
So with the Security Council, you'd have to have a unanimous vote, or at least, slightly indifferent parties voting present or not voting at all. We had a UN Security Council resolution late in March that did pass without the U.S. Participating, and it was specifically just for Israel and Gaza, for Hamas. It was also conditioned on the release of hostages. Obviously, none of that happened. So in your strategy, is the idea behind what Iran might be thinking that a second Security Council resolution, a broader one, would come with a good deal more pressure to try to force a shutdown?
Yes, absolutely. Basically, the Biden administration said, and that corresponds to what may happen if Israel accepts, that's a different story. The Biden administration said, I am not going to be voting for anything against Israel as long as it has to do with the protection of Israel. But then they said, but we are opposed to an Israeli action against the Iran regime inside Iran, which translates, in terms of UN to the following. If it appears with the help of media, very close to the administration, that the war is escalating, it will create a movement in the international community, both in Europe and in the United States, that this should stop. It's gotten out of control, and therefore the United States delegation may do one of two, either accept, which I doubt, the draft for a UN resolution that would force Israel for a ceasefire, and Iran as well, or they would abstain. Abstaining basically would give the win to those who wants to impose a resolution for ceasefire. All depends on the language. If the language, and I'm sure it's going to be the same, that we are calling on all parties in the Middle East to stop, it would immediately imply that it will stop also in Gaza, to put Israel basically in a much weaker position. This may not really change the Israeli position, but it will weaken it to a certain point. That is, in my view, the position or the planning of the Iranian regime and the Iran lobby in the United States, because they work together.
So it certainly seems like high stakes depended on reading how the U.S. is going to respond diplomatically and really putting the pressure there. We did see today that the U.S. shut down a vote by the U.N. to bring full membership to Palestine. Could that potentially signal, a little flexibility on how the Biden administration may respond in, if this is what Iran's doing?
The Biden administration, part of their decisions are in consultation with the Iran lobby, because the Iran lobby is basically the Iran deal lobby, and that's a lot of finances that oversees the transfer of billions and billions of dollars. So it's a very smart position that the bureaucrats of the Biden administration are trying to do. They always would like to show the American public, including the communities mostly affected, the Jewish American community, Middle Eastern American community, that they are fair, that they are in the middle, that if a resolution is really to force Israel on a full-fledged resolution such as two-state solution or the recognition of Palestine, they will say, no, we oppose this one. So it's showing rationality. On the other hand, if the resolution is about, just a ceasefire, everybody stops, that would appear in the view of the architects in Washington, those close to the Iran lobby, that it is rational, it is moderate. But it translates for Israel into a problem. Because if Israel subscribes to that resolution and say, okay, I'm halting everything in Gaza and elsewhere, I'm not even striking back at Iran's military, even if there are goodies, even if the administration says, well, we'll start opening channels between you and Saudi Arabia, these are the carrots. But the Israelis will understand that if they spare the military militia organization of Hamas, they lose the war in Gaza eventually.
So you briefly mentioned the recent strike on the Iranian embassy compound in Damascus, Syria. Israel says it wasn't a strike on a consular building, but on a facility being used by the Quds Force. It's part of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Iran has very much categorized their actions as an act of self-defense in response to that. While the attack was going on, they invoked Article 51 of the UN Charter, that's the legitimate self-defense provision, and saying very explicitly, we're doing this as an appropriate response to this attack on our embassy compound in a third country, and we consider this matter to be resolved. Is this just messaging, or is this just a pretext, or, this is actually a strike on what they consider to be Iranian soil? But are you contending that this was largely a premeditated plan anyway?
It is both. Let me explain very quickly. To have a militia or a piece of your army in a third country coordinating activities between Hezbollah in Lebanon, the militias in Syria and in Iraq, the Pasdaran, and even the Houthis to a certain point, these are military activities. So if you have an army that is using the barracks or an extension of an embassy. Of course, the Israelis were not hitting embassy in Damascus just because it's an embassy or a consul. They could have done it elsewhere. They could have done it in many countries around them. Why are they not going after embassies? That specific compound, and it was not actually the building of the embassy. It was an extension. But let's suppose the extension has some sort of diplomatic immunity. But it's invaded by an army, which is actually coordinating activities against Israel. And the war between Iran and Israel not just had been intensifying since October 7. There were drones coming against the Israelis. The Iran regime funds basically and train Hamas and makes statements. That's crucial in international law. The Iran regime has been making statements that we, quote unquote, we are supporting Hamas and their bombardments of Israel. So when you have that context, Israel has the right under international law to hit specifically the places and locations of the military structure of Iran deployed in a third country. Yes, you can, of course. A diplomatic status is not going to cover, legally speaking, an active military operations. It would cover if there is an attaché. It would cover if there are even officers sitting there for training. But this was a moving operational unit in that compound, in that building. But the Iranian regime obviously is going to use this. And they have probably, who knows, we will know in the future, moved further material in Syria. And they knew that the Israelis will hit them. They have been hitting them for many years. And Iran's regime has been, funding Hezbollah firing on the Galilee, same for Hamas. These are two parties at an active war. And therefore, the Israelis have the right to respond. But I believe, in my own analysis, that this was an attempt by the Iranian regime to drag Israel into striking inside Iran so that the escalation would lead to a condemnation of Israel and a pressure on the Israeli public so that they would find that a ceasefire in the region, okay, let's do it, we'll see later. That's the real goal, in my view, of Tehran.
All right, Dr. Ferry, there's plenty more to get into with all of this right after this break.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you.
Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, folks, welcome back from the break. I'm here with Dr. Waleed Fares. We're talking about the Israel and Iran geopolitical tensions and the potential avenues of response by the U.S. and Israel itself. Dr. Fares, earlier this week, the U.S. House went through a flurry of activity, introducing a number of sanctions on Iran that were passed under suspension of the rules, meaning with two-thirds, so overwhelming support for some of these measures. We're also now seeing a lot of movement with foreign aid packages, including a fairly hefty sum that's supposed to go to Israel, almost exclusively air defense. A lot of it is Iron Dome, Iron Beam, and David Sling material. There is some humanitarian aid for Gaza as well. How does this factor into Iran's plans? Because it certainly seems like what's been happening may have broken the deadlock in Congress.
In Congress, we have a majority, an automatic majority, that cares about, is concerned about the protection of the Israeli territory and the population of Israel. You know, that you have a majority, we've seen it always in all the votes, for Jerusalem, for, supplying Israel with what it needs. Even the administration would say, there is no limit, we'll help Israel as much as it, but Israel must stay contained. What the opposition to Israel in America, including members of Congress, would argue, if they are supportive of the Iran deal, that Israel should defend itself, but Israel should not change the status quo in the region. And without changing the status quo in the region, Israel will always be affected, will always be threatened. So Israel is trying to say, I have been attacked in a genocidal way on October 7th. I need to respond first in Gaza to dismantle the entire military operation of Hamas. And second, if needed be, and if I'm attacked from any country, Hezbollah, PMF in Iraq, but certainly if the Pasdaran, the Revolutionary Guard, will attack me from Iran, I have the right. Now, it's up to the Israelis to decide, and that's a very critical matter. They decide when, they decide how, but on the principle, they have that right. And I think the Israeli leadership is somewhat aware of some of the ideas that we have been discussing right now is, in terms of what the UN plan is, what the administration is trying to do. So they're saying we will reserve the right for a strike. They may do something very limited. They may do something delayed. But what is very important for the Israelis are two things. Number one, finish the operation in Rafah. And that cannot finish if a UN security resolution is issued. It puts Israel in a very difficult situation. Second, start negotiations with the Arab coalition members, the Abraham Accord members, who also are being threatened by the Iranians. And for that, the Israelis can do it. Of course, the Biden administration will be cornered. It cannot come and say, no, I don't want negotiation between Israel and the Arabs. They will have to say yes. So Israel must be on the offensive, but controlling that offensive. If they need to strike inside Iran, if they see something very dangerous, they could do it. That would not stop their operation in Gaza. That would not stop their outreach to the Arabs. And Israel has a majority in Congress that needs to actually support the Abraham Accord, support the defense of Israel. So that the situation at this point in time will continue to be like this, in my view, till our elections. And then we'll see after that.
Okay. So a point of clarification, you briefly mentioned where the Biden administration's line of changing the status quo would be. Just to clarify what you mean there, are we talking borders or security control? Because there's been a dispute between Netanyahu's government and the administration over Israel potentially wanting security control over everything from the Jordan River west of that.
That's a great question. Actually, the answers vary and are moving depending on the situation on the ground. Let me say this. The deep red, the purple, for the Biden administration, which is connected to the Iran deal, and some of their supporters are actually profiting from the Iran deal, but that's another subject. The deep purple red line is not to hit the Islamic Republic and cause a collapse of the negotiations between the administration and Iran. That is what they're trying everything to convince Mr. Netanyahu and his government not to do. They are telling him, what is it that you need? We'll help you with, but do not go there. Number two, they're trying also to save Rafah, because Iran is pressuring the Iran regime, that is pressuring, Washington, and telling them, if Israel goes into Rafah, we're going to send plenty of waves, and if you respond with the Israelis, we're going to collapse the Iran deal. So the Israelis knows where the red lines are. On Iran, they can and would be patient, not respond immediately. On Rafah, they cannot. They will have to finish the issue of Gaza. Now, to the question of where is Israel drawing the line, I don't think that anybody in Israel wants to reoccupy Gaza, if that is the question. No, they have left it. They don't want to get back to it. The dispute is over the West Bank, not in Gaza. But what they want to see, they haven't said it very clearly yet, but what they want to see with the help of the Arab coalition is a change of regime in Gaza, not just the military activities of Hamas, but to have a new generation of Palestinians, maybe those who have lived in the Gulf, maybe those who are opposed to Hamas. That is an architecture that cannot even begin to become reality as long as Hamas is there. So Rafah is not just the end of Hamas, it's the beginning of peace between Palestinians and Israelis.
So in the broader idea of trying to avoid these red lines and dealing with Iran, what is the, apart from going directly into Rafah, is there anything else, you know, Israel can do specifically toward Iran in the long term? I know that, or even in the short term, I know they have these militias in the PMF in Iraq and these other stations in Syria and neighboring nations. Are those potentially very valid targets for the potential retaliation?
What the U.S. can do is enormous. What another administration, or even the same administration, if it changes its policy, the U.S. is everywhere. It's in eastern Syria. It's in northern and central Iraq. It has all these task forces in the region. It has excellent relationship, if it wants, with communities inside Iran, the Kurds, the Free Lebanese, to rise against all these militias. What is missing is a decision in Washington. That's about the U.S. position. And that we cannot change. I don't think we're going to be able to change it before our election. But the Israelis can do something more limited than the United States and then weaken the position of the Iranian regime. Number one, they should intensify their work with their partners of the Abraham Accord. They should cross that line and say, we are reaching out to Riyadh, we are reaching out to Cairo, we are reaching out to those, and then see what they can do together with them after the war. Number two, remember that many communities in the Middle East, if America is not ready to move, not America, but the administration is not ready to move with them to help them, I don't think they would be opposed to have an Israeli role like the Kurds. Who said that the Kurds would not sign something with the Israelis? Who said that the other opposition movements? And most importantly for the Israelis is to activate their relationship with the Iranian opposition. Iran regime is all over the place with multiple militias. Israel has the right to reach out to the Iranian opposition. We know that some leaders of the diaspora, the Iranian diaspora, went to Israel. So Israel, I think, now is observing the immediate matter to resolve, which is Rafah. That's my view. They are observing the changes within the Biden administration. They still have a few months to survive those movements, and is observing also if any light is coming from the Arab world. It's not easy. The transition between now and the end of this year is going to need Israel to be patient, but not inactive.
Okay, well, we'll certainly see how they decide to respond in the coming days and weeks. Dr. Waleed Faris, it's great to have you with us today. Folks, we'll be back right after this break.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, folks, welcome back from the break. That was Dr. Waleed Faris, a former Trump advisor on national security and author of Iran, an Imperialist Republic and U.S. Policy. He certainly had some interesting ideas on the current geopolitical situation between Iran and Israel, Gaza, and the rest of the Middle East, and how that could potentially play out. We thank him for being on the show. In other news, some members of the Kennedy family today are expected to endorse President Joe Biden. That would typically not be much of a surprise, considering that the family has traditionally been Democratic-leaning for many decades, but it's notable given that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is mounting an independent campaign, and they're opting for Biden in place of their own flesh and blood. Kennedy originally mounted a Democratic primary challenge to Biden, but ended up going for an independent route, citing his frustrations with the DNC. He's openly disagreed with many members of his family on issues such as vaccines and personal privacy. Several of them have contended that he could be a potential spoiler, as have many Democratic analysts, that could potentially undermine the Biden administration's campaign to stay in office. He, for his part, is certainly polling well ahead of other independent candidates such as Cornel West and the Green Party's Jill Stein. So it somewhat remains to be seen how formidable his candidacy actually will be. But he personally took it in stride, said that political involvement of the Kennedy family, especially with the Democrats, is a family tradition, and highlighted that, quote, "we are divided in our opinions, but united in our love for each other." We certainly respect the sentiment and wish him well in that regard. Couldn't we all try to not feud with our family members at the Thanksgiving dinner table, just over politics. In New York, former President Donald Trump's criminal trial in Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg's case is proceeding, began this Monday, and so far they've been going through jury selection, and those efforts were dealt a blow with the dismissal of two jurors over partiality concerns today. Trump has previously tried to get this case moved to another venue, citing that New York, he's not sure he can actually get a fair jury pool. It's a heavily Democratic bastion. He's certainly a very well-known figure, and this is a high-profile case. We're certainly seeing difficulties in finding members of the jury pool that the defense and prosecution can both be happy with. Now, remember, the case itself is unprecedented. This is the first criminal indictment and the first criminal trial of a former president in U.S. history. There were other indictments against Trump that were scheduled to go ahead of this, but they've been delayed by his claims of presidential immunity. Arguments at the Supreme Court over those are expected later this month, but Trump will not be in attendance because Judge Juan Merchant, who is overseeing the case, is not going to let Trump go to D.C. to actually hear those. He's denied several Trump bids for additional time off and has yet to rule on his request to attend his son Barron's high school graduation. We'll see where that goes, but it certainly has Trump irate. Trump has not been exceptionally thrilled with Judge Merchant and has asked him to recuse himself twice, but both times Judge Merchant has rejected that request. At issue for him is that his daughter is employed with Authentic. That's a digital firm that's heavily Democratic-leaning and boasts both President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris as clients. Trump's certainly not happy about this, and you're going to run into almost certainly a lot more criticism of the judge. But there's a gag order in place that could potentially find Trump winding up in even more legal jeopardy should he go a little bit too far with his criticisms here. Now, in D.C., he does face the federal indictment in special counsel Jack Smith's probe over his handling of the January 6th situation. But that narrative is coming under question with a number of former D.C. National Guardsmen who have testified that their leadership did not act decisively and deploy the D.C. National Guard to the Capitol to deal with the situation appropriately. You had a House Oversight or House Administration Subcommittee on Oversight hearing on Wednesday in which four former members of the D.C. National Guard who have become whistleblowers had harsh words for their leadership, again saying that they didn't act decisively to send the troops there and later that they worked to mislead the public about how they actually handled the response. These folks, all of whom have alleged that, or have made clear that they don't have political motivations for doing so and simply needed to come forward to respect the integrity of their service. So we'll certainly see how that plays out. It's a questioning of the narrative that has been there. The Capitol Police have come under a good deal of scrutiny as well. We'll see what comes of that testimony. The Biden administration is also looking at reimposing sanctions on Venezuela. Last year, they reached an agreement with the president of that country, Nicolas Maduro, who has ruled the country since winning his first election in 2013. He was reelected in 2018 in an election widely regarded as beset by fraud and, you know, illegitimate. The agreement was going to see the U.S. lift sanctions temporarily in exchange for democratic reforms. Venezuela is set to hold an election this year, but the State Department confirmed that they were pretty much unsatisfied with all of the actions that the Maduro regime had taken and were going to reimpose sanctions in retaliation because they had not met their obligations under the deal. All right, folks, that's pretty much everything. I will be here again tomorrow for one more day, and then John will be back. So have a good rest of your day and hope to see you again.